Welcome to the Aarna Law Podcasts with me, Kamala Naganand, your host, Managing Partner at Aarna Law. In today's episode of our special series, celebrating influential women across various fields, we've delved into the world of architecture and sustainable design. We're joined by a remarkable Sai Deodhar, an architect renowned for her commitment to sustainability and eco-friendly practices. Heading Studio Aarti in Bangalore, Sai's unique approach resonates through her philosophy of contextualism, where each design is a response to its environmental, climatic, cultural, and site-specific context. We delve into her journey from working in cities like Mumbai and Singapore to establishing her own practice, her innovative use of technology and design, and her advocacy for women in a male-dominated field. We're excited to explore Sai's journey in architecture, her vision for sustainable living, and the impact of her work on sharing a more eco-friendly future. Stay tuned for a fascinating discussion ahead. Hi Sai, welcome to our podcast this afternoon. It's a pleasure having you here with us.
Hi, Kamala. Thanks for having me over.
Sai, I'd like for you to share with us your experiences as, you know, somebody who's been in the industry for many years, somebody who runs their own architectural practice. Can you give us what the journey has been like?
Okay. So I started practicing by myself about 12 or 13 years back. That is 2008. Before that, I worked in multiple cities like Mumbai, Delhi, and also Singapore. And after getting some work experience, I started my own practice here in Bangalore. So we are a small firm. It's called Studio Aarti. And over the years, our practice has evolved into being something which is, you know, based on the philosophy of contextualism, which actually is an approach where the design is a response to the literal and abstract characteristics or the environment in which the building sits. So that is what our firm tries to do these days. So that is how the practice has evolved.
Fantastic. So it cannot be cookie cutter. It is, your practice really depends on the location, the terrain, maybe the environmental factors around, the vegetation, and that's how you design your buildings. Is that right?
Yes. So see, the context could be environmental, it could be climatic, or it could be cultural, or it could be city level, or it could be site level also. Like for instance, the very studio in which I'm sitting, we've designed it for ourselves. And it is based on the principles of sustainable design. So very much the context is climatology. We also did a couple of farmhouses in Bangalore near Kanakpura Road, but the context is very cultural. So, you know, we've designed the houses based on the concept of Kottimane or the courtyard house, using local building techniques and local building materials. So it's a very culturally rich context. Or there's an office which we did on Airport Road for a family investment firm. And that is very contextual with respect to, say, the startup city, which is Bangalore. So, you know, the context could be varied. But yeah, the focus is definitely on sustainability and the environment in which the building sits.
So do you see more of your clients coming to you saying, we want sustainable buildings, we want contextually relevant buildings?
Unfortunately, the number of clients who are aware are few. So we do get a few clients who actually come to us saying that they want contextualism in their buildings. But as a firm, it is our philosophy that, you know, whenever we get new clients, we kind of try and make them aware or try to educate them as to why it is necessary to make buildings which are more contextual. So we try and do that. Yeah. And I think, more often than not, we end up convincing the client.
Super, that's fantastic. You know, I am a huge supporter of sustainability. So can you share with us, you know, some of the ancient traditional forms of sustainable practices in architecture that you have seen and you've researched and implemented in the buildings that you have designed successfully?
So when it comes to sustainable architecture, there are various, so it is basically a multidisciplinary approach that one needs to follow. So when we design our buildings, the five basic things we normally take into consideration. So the first and foremost being energy management, which is huge. I think which is probably more than 70% of the component of sustainable design. Then we have water management, waste management, then the landscape management and indoor air quality, air management. So these are the things that we look at. When we do our research, normally what we realize is most of the traditional buildings are based on the concept of sustainability with respect to climatology or the context in which they had been designed back then. So not just with respect to the materials that are used, but also the techniques, the functions with respect to the direction of the various spaces within the building, the organization of spaces, all of that is very much based on climate or climatology. And we try and definitely, when we do our research, we try and definitely follow those principles. But yes, we do take traditional wisdom and try and use the new technology to implement it.
For example, we did a farmhouse on Kanakpura Road recently, and there we have used the concept of courtyard for climate control. Now, we researched the houses, the courtyard houses in that region, and we've used that traditional technique and implemented it in a modern way. Another house that we have done here in Bangalore, we've used soil stabilized blocks and some rammed earth walls. Again, because the soil was suitable there. And this is again a technique which we borrowed from vernacular architecture.
Super. From an intellectual property standpoint, have you seen the challenges or have you faced any challenges?
To tell you honestly, as per the Architects Act, the design and the drawings belong to the architect. But the difficulty is in proving it. So basically, for example, you know, if I have designed a certain kind of a building and as per the act, it is protected, right? But then, you know, somebody can take that particular design, change, say, maybe a few walls or a few windows or something and make a new one. How do you prove it?
Yeah, that is a big problem from a legal perspective to say you've got to have the right amount of literature, you know, enough proof to kind of support your design and the aesthetic that you go with. But I think, you know, if you look at some of the largest architectural firms in the world today, they kind of have that stamp to say, yes, it comes from a Zaha Hadid, or it comes from, you know, even a B.B. Doshi. So yeah. I guess that's really what people are looking for nowadays, right? That kind of a particular form of aesthetic that they look at in an architectural design.
Yes. Unfortunately, in India, at least, you know, I'm aware of the laws in India, you cannot patent or protect a particular style of architecture. So what happens is, over the years, as practices evolve, a particular style gets formed and people definitely do look for it. There will be people who will copy those styles and try to, you know, emulate some of it. There will be people who will take inspiration from masterpieces or even, you know, traditional architecture. But I think that is what has been happening till now. So we have not seen any cases where a particular style has been copied throughout the architectural practice of another firm.
And there's a very fine line between inspiration and copying, right?
Yes.
So very often we've seen that people say, yes, I'm very inspired, and then they copy, and then you're kind of left high and dry.
Yes, yes.
So what would you call your architectural style?
I would not like to, you know, actually give a name to the style, but like I said, the philosophy is contextualism. So each building is completely different in the sense, depends upon where and how that building and for what purpose that building or that structure or that particular habitat has been built for.
For example, a house that is designed in Delhi will be completely different from a house that is designed in Bangalore because the climate is different. Delhi is extreme and Bangalore is moderate. So the passive techniques used for human comfort will be completely different. Also, the use of materials. Say, if I use the local granite, Sadarhalli, for a house here in Bangalore, I will not use that in Delhi because it is not local. And that is why the style is different.
So do you see technology playing a bigger role in the design of buildings, especially from the perspective of AI?
Yes. So, you know, as architectural practice has evolved, you know, in the last few years, initially, it used to be manual drawings. Then we moved on to computers and certain softwares, which are basically tools for drawing and representing. Recently, because of AI, you also see that there is some work being done where tools like AI can help you in design ideation. So I don't know about where people have started using that in India, but abroad, definitely a few firms have started using AI as a tool for designing design ideation. So some of the tools that they use are
Midjourney, Stable Fusion, and a few others.
So basically, if you give the right prompts to get the desired output, you can get a good design ideation. But as of now, the technology has not reached a stage where after ideation, the tool cannot generate technical drawings for you. Because in the end, the building has to be built. And to build the building, you need technical drawings which need to be followed. So now that is where the skills of the architects come into picture. So once you have the ideation, how do you generate drawings and make technical drawings for the building to be executed? Maybe in the future it happens, but as of now, it is not happening. So where the skill lies? Let's see how and where it evolves.
Would you consider using AI in your studio?
Oh, yes, definitely. In fact, I have myself tried a couple of tools to see how a design ideation can be done, because, you know, that is going to be the future. So one has to be, you know, well equipped to use these tools to enhance the design quality. In fact, I remember when tools like AutoCAD, Revit and all came in the market, there were firms who started using these tools for drawing and representation. And the work became much faster. So because, you know, manual work was completely gone and you could use computers, and the focus then was more into designing, ideation, detailed design, detailing. All of that took more importance. So I think similarly with AI, once you know how to use the tool rightly, the kind of work that happens in the office will definitely change, but it will be for good. So right now, too early to say how it will change, but it will definitely be a tool for the office to implement right now for design ideation, probably in the future for even generating technical drawings. And then the focus would be for the architect to make sure that when you have a particular design, it is critically thought of. So critical thinking becomes important, and implementation or execution of that particular idea or that particular design on field becomes important.
Yeah. So, you know, that's from the perspective of design. What about even from the perspective of execution? Do you think things like 3D printing or a more efficient way of building buildings is going to be using more technology?
Yes, definitely. And I think, again, that's the positives there are, you know, things happen quicker. Firstly, it is so. One is time. Second is the workmanship, accuracy. So all of that. And if you're spending enough time at the design stage, then the product that you see, the outcome, which is actually on field, will be exactly as you had envisaged it on your computer. So that is the beauty of 3D printing.
But do you think India is ready to adapt and adopt 3D printing?
Cost-wise, I don't know how it is going to work right now in India, but definitely in the future, we should be ready to do that. Especially for smaller projects, like, you know, a small cabin or a one or two bedroom small dwelling, we should be able to do it. So I also see that there are a lot of companies now doing prefab homes, right? Is that something that's also going to really catch on?
Well, I think prefab homes is a great concept for a country like India, where, you know, with the kind of growth that we are going to see in the next decade or two, we will need some buildings which will have to be done quicker and faster. And prefab is the way to go because really, I mean, there are some buildings where you don't need customization. Prefab is quicker, it's factory made, and you can just repeat the module and make number of modules in a very short time. So I think it's a great thing.
I'd like to now focus a little bit on you as a woman architect. What are the challenges that you faced in the industry?
Okay, so firstly, let me tell you that architecture is a completely male-dominated field and it has been like this since many, many years. So in India, as of now, there are about 44 number of registered architects, there are about 44% who are women. But only probably a single-digit percentage of women actually practice. Now, there are multiple reasons for it. One is it's a very male-dominated profession. Second would be the pay parity. Then work-life balance. Site visits are not easy. Also, somehow the construction industry in India is not an organized sector. So, I mean, there's land and there's money. So, obviously, there will be corruption. So, dealing with various authorities, like sanctioning authorities and all of that is also not very pleasant. So, all in all, there are challenges for women. So, most of the women who study architecture either move into interior design. I mean, you really don't need to be an architect to do interior design, but it is a cozy job. So, unlike architectural practice, but they move there. Some of them also join the corporate architectural offices or firms. Many go into teaching. Some of them go into other design disciplines like, you know, UI, UX or graphic design. So, yeah, the gap is definitely there. And I think it is really sad that the situation is like this because, see, as architects, we are designing buildings and habitats and shelters. 50% of the users are going to be women. And if there's no representation, then how do you come up with equitable design? If women are going to be, 50% of the women are going to be the end users, they are the stakeholders. They need to be a part of the design process, design and execution process. For instance, you know, say spaces which are safe and secure for women or which are women-centric or rather, I would say equitable. How will you achieve that if there's so much disparity? So that's definitely a matter of concern.
Oh, absolutely. That's a really important point because, you know, if you look at even, I'm not even talking about commercial establishments. I'm just talking about a house, right? Whether small or big. A woman is really the one who makes it a home. And so her input on the design is going to add tremendous comfort to the rest of the family. So let me ask you like a politically maybe sensitive question, but what do you believe in the clients that you deal with, right? Who is the decision maker? Is it a lot of women actually participating in the design process with you or is it still the men?
So to tell you honestly, if it's a house, like a villa or a farmhouse, women definitely have their points, their say. So they definitely drive the design because they are particular about many things, right? The kitchen has to be done in such a way. I want the kids' bedroom to be in such a way. Both the kids buy it. So we want different work there. So all of that is there. So women are definitely the decision makers there. So, but that's in the urban context. I mean, I have only practiced in Bangalore, Mumbai and Delhi. So I have definitely seen that women are involved in the design process for sure.
Super. So what can we do to bring more women practice as architects?
See, actually, generally, I think in India, the awareness is very low as to what architecture is. So forget about just women in architecture, but who architects are. I mean, basically, architects are people who, with the helm of art and technology, design dwellings or shelters, right? And somehow, here in India, the awareness that when you're designing a house or a dwelling or a shelter or a home or whatever, you need an architect to do it. Now, that awareness itself is very low, which is unfortunate. So, a recent Council of Architecture report which I read, it said that only 2%, okay, only 2% of the buildings in India are designed by architects.
Wow.
Now, that's a very, very low number. So, that's the kind of awareness there is. Also, like I had mentioned previously, you know, the Architects Act protects the title architect, but it does not say that it is mandatory for a person to get the building designed by a person who has the title of architect, meaning someone who has studied to become an architect. So I think that is where the problem is.
Yeah, and you can see it in our day-to-day lives. I mean, when I was just at the IIM Bangalore recently, and I just saw what an amazing job B.V. Doshi had done. You know, just the sense of inspiration that one gets in a well-designed space as compared to our cities, which have so many buildings being created, but not really with a lot of thought. Right. So I think the role of an architect is to interpret what we need with the times and give us thoughtful buildings, right? Meaningful buildings.
Yes, yes, sir. Finally, I mean, we are designing for human comfort, but we also need spaces which are functional yet aesthetically pleasing. We need buildings which are structurally sound. We need barrier-free spaces. Again, this is a very, very important point. We need equitable spaces. And all this will happen only if professionals are involved in making or designing these habitats.
So tell me, who are your favorite architects?
Actually, there are quite a few. I like Corbusier's masterpieces. I like the simplicity and minimalism in Tadao Ando's work, then Ken Young for his green buildings, Jeffrey Bawa for his site sensitivity and contextualism. Then here in India, of course, Laurie Baker for vernacular architecture, then Charles Coria for his iconic buildings and scale and proportion. And I mean, I can just go on and on.
So
yeah.
For us, some of the buildings that have inspired you, or some of the architectural works that have really spoken to you, buildings which are completed.
Basically, I like to experience spaces. You know, sometimes even a small courtyard, a small landscaped courtyard, can be as inspiring as a masterpiece.
Great. Thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. And I've learned a lot, and I hope, you know, people watching will too. Thank you, Tai, and wishing you all the very best.
Thank you, Kamla. Thanks once again. It was really nice chatting with you.
As always.
Thank you for tuning into the Arnalaw Podcasts. It's been a privilege to host Sai Deodhar and delve into her compelling narrative and expertise in sustainable architecture. Our series continues to spotlight the remarkable achievements of women across diverse arenas, bringing you more enriching discussions. For further episodes and in-depth conversations, please visit our site at www.arnalaw.com, where you can access our complete podcast collection. We look forward to welcoming you back for more insightful episodes soon.